So all that anybody knows about Uganda is the LRA, the Lord's Resistance Army, and Joseph Kony, who most people know as Joseph Kony.
Oh, it's Kony.
Kony, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So anytime you think about atrocities in Uganda, you think Joseph Kony.
Yeah.
But the truth is, Joseph Kony committed atrocities himself.
Yes.
And the Ugandan military, under the president Yoweri Museveni, who's been in power since 86, he's been in power for almost 33 years. Over three decades. He committed major atrocities in northern Uganda. Villages, man, just wiped out with, you know, basically attrition. Like starving the people. You know, there was massacres by the military also, but there was like really like they were starving the people. Wow. So a lot of people don't know it, and that's why the film is important. A brilliant genocide. It's so smart the way it was done. It is brilliant because you can't tell that it was a genocide because they made it happen. It's not really like in the open. You know, there's not, you're not going out there like in Rwanda where people were being massacred with machetes.
There's not a lot of blood being spilled on the street. You know, even though those happen in the villages. The major man, that was, I had no idea, and I was blown away because, you know, the video was packed with so much details and information. And, you know, plus the event, you know, the fact that they had you and the Professor Milton and, you know, the other people over there, it's like a great combination.
Helen Epstein and Judy River, both of them, they're authors. Helen is also a professor, you know, and Judy River is a journalist. So,
She's a journalist from Canada, right? Hopefully, because I think, you know, she probably speaks French.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah,
she
does. Would be great to have
it. I think you should.
You should
do the podcast with her.
Because what is up, you know, what is happening in, like especially my community, because of a lot of our people, they like French speaking. You know, like some of the information they're not getting it quite.
Right.
You know,
I wish, man, I would love to do it in French, but it would take twice as much time.
No,
because I have cool to do my thinking in a different language and translate.
A lot of people really, you know, like it's one of the one of the most listened episode that you know we had so
far. The one that we did,
the one on Rwanda, you know, because anytime, you know, people would tell me like, you know, like they, because, you know, we have to be honest, Kagame has a great PR system.
Absolutely. Do you see, the film is called A Brilliant Genocide. I think I would say Kagame is brilliant at PR. He spends a lot of money on PR, on promoting his image. He wants to keep a perfect image. That's his biggest struggle. If he was the type that was like really good at PR, but didn't try to maintain a perfect image, he'd probably get away with all these crimes because he also committed a brilliant genocide. It wasn't so brilliant. You know, the reason why he's getting away with it right now is because he's still a darling of Western countries. And the countries love him. The donor nations love him. The U.S. backs him. The U.K. backs him. Now he's in good graces with France. But the day that he loses the support, and it's slowly coming. You know, his narrative is getting shattered. You know, day by day, the truth is slowly coming out.
It's gonna come down crashing because, you know, I saw you. You know, you posted like few people that he had to free because of, you know, external pressure. And I think that's good. It's good. Hopefully, they could still run against him, even though I don't know if they're gonna win. But I think it's gonna shake things up. Like at least he would understand that. You know. People would, anytime they'll get, any chance they get, they will kick him out. So, like, it would make him understand it, and he will calm down and do some of the, you know, atrocity.
So, One of the things that I should have said that I didn't say,
mm-hmm.
I should have said and didn't say in that event, because mm-hmm. it just escaped me.
Yeah.
And even the day before, mm-hmm. when I was on Straight Talk Africa, the show,
mm-hmm.
Rwanda is a country that's, it does not have rule of law. It has rule by law, which is what dictators do. It's like a perfect, it's the playbook, the mm-hmm. classic playbook by dictators. They take these laws, they make laws to protect themselves,
yeah.
and to protect their dictatorship. Uh-huh. So you do whatever little thing that you do, it comes back to haunt you, and they make it look legal. Mm-hmm. In the same way that, you know, when slavery happened,
mm-hmm.
it was legal
yeah.
to do that, because they had laws to allow to do that.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, so that's what he has. So one of the ladies
mm-hmm.
that was freed because of external pressure,
uh-huh.
according to Rwandan laws,
mm-hmm.
she couldn't run again because she served so much time. She was convicted for, when you serve a certain amount of months, uh-huh. yeah, jail time,
mm-hmm.
then you cannot run for presidency. Mm-hmm. The second lady, that's Victoire mm-hmm. Ingabire.
Yeah, yeah.
Diane Rwigara,
mm-hmm.
she might be able to run because she was cleared of her charges.
Okay.
And, you know, twice.
Mm-hmm.
This is two times when Kagame's PR has really, really failed. Because, you know, when he released Victoire,
uh-huh.
he was expecting that people would just jump and say, oh, Kagame is such a great, forgiving person.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And he let her out. But they, you know, it was quickly, you know, we were able to demonstrate, hey, this guy, he's under external pressure. That's why he did it. So that one flopped. Then he, they dropped the charges against Diane.
Uh-huh.
And the thing they don't get is, you should have never arrested these two ladies to begin with. They should have never served any time to begin with.
Yeah.
So when he released Diane, then they started claiming that the judicial system in Rwanda works and is independent.
Yeah.
And obviously that's also not true.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's what's happening. And I should have mentioned for sure that it's rule by law, not rule of law.
I think also what I think was great about, you know, some of the interventions, especially like when they ask you to tell your story of, you know, about, you know, being a survivor of the genocide survivor, you make sure people understood that, you know, there were atrocity, you know, like people committed atrocity, mm-hmm. but that don't make all African savages.
Oh, yeah, I think that's important.
Yeah.
Because you have people like I said, look the things Museveni has done,
uh-huh.
what Joseph Kony has done,
mm-hmm.
what Kagame has done,
yeah.
what Kabila has done,
yeah.
what, you know, Compaoré is done.
Yeah.
You know, Issena Bré,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Idriss Déby and Meles Zenawi and all of these, you know, African either dictators or warlords.
Yeah.
They've committed atrocities mm-hmm. because they are extremists. They are so power hungry, they will do anything to either take power
mm-hmm.
and to maintain themselves in power.
Yeah.
But that doesn't represent us. Most Africans are collateral damage.
Yeah.
You know, they just, you know, happen to be innocent bystanders and get killed in the crossfire.
Yeah, it's amazing how, you know, the, like yesterday, I mean, the day of the event, Milton, the Professor Milton was explaining how Museveni had, no, I'm not sure if it was him or the other professor.
Helen Epstein.
Yeah, I'm not sure about mm-hmm. her name. But she was given details how Museveni wasn't involved in, like, attacks in, like, Sudan and all the neighboring countries.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's how they usually use, you know, like, those puppets, right? Like, mm-hmm. even, you know, in Burkina, Compaoré, like, you know, we've heard stories that, you know, like, he was involved in a lot of countries.
Yeah, Liberia, you know, like Sierra Leone.
Even Ivory Coast.
Yeah, Ivory Coast,
Like, it's just these people, they're not only a danger to their own people, but they're is a danger to the world. Because if what's funny is, I feel like the West, you know, I'm pretty sure they know that these people, they're only serving them because they don't have, they can't do anything against them. Because at some point, if they feel like if they have to stay in power, they have to attack whoever they have to attack, they would do it because they're just power hungry, you know, but they still support them, knowing that, you know, they're not only going to destroy their own kind, but they're going to destroy, like, even, like, other countries, like, you know, whatever they could destroy. It's like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. These puppets of, you know, Western powers, they will do anything for their masters.
Yeah.
And that's what you have. This classic example, Museveni, the only neighboring country that he hasn't really ventured into is Tanzania. Tanzania is a very powerful country. When you look at the rest of the countries that surround Uganda, Uganda is landlocked, it doesn't touch the ocean.
Yeah, just like Burkina.
Yeah, and Rwanda is that way too, Burundi, Zimbabwe, Zambia, you know, a few countries like that. Museveni has been involved in South Sudan, in Sudan, and then South Sudan. Even now, today, the atrocities and the war taking place in Sudan, in South Sudan. So he's involved. His troops are involved, you know, and people are running away from South Sudan to Uganda, and he's acting like, you know, like he's taking care of refugees. I mean, and then there are people who say, well, you know, that's so great. They're receiving refugees and everything. You don't really have a choice. When refugees run, they just go to whatever, you know, wherever the gunshots, you know, are no longer can hear those, that's where they go.
They run away
from them. But where we're sitting right now, if somebody shoots into this house, we're running. And it's not going to matter what direction. We're just going to run.
Until you can't hear those shots.
So then he's also, he supported basically the RPF, Kagame, and the other soldiers, especially the leaders of the rebellion in Rwanda. They were part of the Ugandan military. When Kagame came here in the U.S. in 1990 to train at Fort Leavenworth, he came as a Ugandan citizen. He was part of the Ugandan military. He was the chief intelligence of the Ugandan military. And then he came here, then converted, went into, you know, he became the rebel leader. And, you know, they won in Rwanda and then invaded the Congo, him and Museveni. That's three countries that Museveni been involved in. South Sudan, Rwanda, Congo. With Kenya, which is another neighboring country, they've had, they haven't had like major war or anything like that, but Museveni has always been belligerent in Kenya. I remember, I think it was 2009 when I was in Kenya, there was a dispute between Uganda and Kenya. And basically, Museveni had sent his troops to, like, take over, like, I think it was a lake, if I remember correctly. It was back in 2009. I wasn't there for long. But then when the Kenyans started saying, hey, look, man, you're crossing, you know, you're like overstepping and everything. He said, oh, you know what? Fine. You know, the water belongs to Kenya, but the fish belongs to Uganda. That's the type of stuff that, you know, the Seveny does. You know, so he's always been belligerent with with Kenya also. You know, but yeah, it's true. It's really true. But nobody ever talks about him.
No, and he, the pictures he was showing at the event, he has pictures with almost every president
of the
U.S.
The last five, I think.
Like,
I think he has one with Trump. I'm not 100% sure about Trump, but he definitely has with Obama.
Not just with Obama. He has one with his wife.
Yep.
With Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama's wife.
Yep.
Right.
And he got Bush.
Mm-hmm.
And he got Clinton. Clinton mm-hmm. is a big fan of both Museveni and Kagame, especially Kagame. But yeah, so you got Obama, you got Bush, you got Clinton, you got the older Bush, and Reagan.
Wow.
Yeah, because Museveni has been around, he's been president since 86. It's ridiculous.
Ain't that funny? Like, you've been president for a long time, and all these, you know, like back home, they always say all these little kids that come and they grow up and become president.
Mm-hmm.
And they come and they boss you around, you know.
Right.
Like, you know, yeah, you got to go do this and, you know, like you run around and you go do it. And
yeah.
You still call yourself president, you know.
Yeah, like people who are born.
Yeah.
They've already, like, they've already gone through school,
mm-hmm.
graduated.
Yeah.
If they went to university, they've graduated.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them have gotten married.
Yeah.
And a lot of them have kids.
Mm-hmm.
Already, so it's like basically people who could be, you know, I mean, I guess they could probably be his grandkids.
Yeah, yeah, you know, of course.
This guy is over 75 years old.
Wow.
And, you know, I know the thing that a lot of people saw about Uganda
mm-hmm.
last year was, you know, that fight in parliament. When there was like,
when there was slap, so,
yeah, they were throwing microphones, yeah, yeah, and you know, yeah.
Someone was explaining that it was mm-hmm. just it was a setup.
No, there was a law that Uganda was trying to pass in parliament.
Oh.
Actually, I think it was maybe earlier this year. So there was a group
mm-hmm.
that was saying, "Don't touch it." It was the age limit. Because Museveni is going to be over 75 years old the next time they have an election. And the constitution said, if you're over 75, you can't run. And so the group in the red, mm-hmm. Like the red hats mm-hmm. and the various mm-hmm. things, they had a slogan,
mm-hmm.
Say, Togi Kwatako,
uh-huh.
Don't touch it.
Okay.
You know? And basically, don't touch that law.
Yeah.
Museveni wanted it passed. You know, he wanted to change.
Mm-hmm.
He brought his security people into wow. parliament, and they beat those people in parliament.
Wow.
And one woman, she was so injured, she I think they hurt her spine.
Ooh.
So, you know, and then finally, I don't remember exactly how it went down, but some people were absent when they voted for it. And he won. And so he, you know, he got it removed. Just like all these other dictators, you know, like Kagame, 2 years ago, he changed the constitution in Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
So he like had people pretending to like ask him to stay.
Same, like that's the same, same scenario they all do.
Yeah.
Compaoré did the same thing too. And he tried to change it. That's what was his downfall.
I'm so yeah. glad. That was the like, result.
There was one person who was saying, actually, Maurice actually told us when we were interviewing Maurice that they have a conference or an event in West Africa that they went, they sent some of their guys mm-hmm. there to network.
Mm-hmm.
And he was explaining how important it was to, you know, like to network with those people, like, you know, those groups in the continent, you know, like mm-hmm. those activists and, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's important.
And I think it was good that, you know, they're able to do it because, you know, yeah, here, like, you know, you're doing a great fight. But, you know, unless there is a relationship between, you know.
Like, it has to be on the ground.
Yeah.
It has to be both outside mm-hmm. and inside. Because you can do all of the fighting outside.
Mm-hmm.
You can win everything outside.
Yeah.
But if there's nothing happening on the inside,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're not gonna have like a result.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, that's why it's important for us to connect with the people on the continent
yeah.
to have a network that is global
mm-hmm.
and make it a global fight.
Yeah.
So that when we finally get to determine our own destiny,
mm-hmm.
when the Africans make decisions mm-hmm. for ourselves,
yeah,
we who are outside in the Western countries
mm-hmm.
can keep the Western countries at bay.
Yeah.
And the people on the continent can, you know, do their thing without, you know, somebody hovering over them and trying to make those decisions for them.
Yeah, but here's my concerns, you know. Like, I've seen cases where, you know, like the youth went on the street.
Mm-hmm.
They overthrew the government.
Mm-hmm.
But the follow-up wasn't what we had hoped.
Yeah.
You know, like...
That happens a lot.
You know, like, even in the case of Burkina, mm-hmm. you know, some people might like what is happening right now, but I don't, you know, because I feel like we're still signing the same type of deals, mm-hmm. you know, like...
It's the same thing that also happened in Egypt.
Okay.
You know, basically, Egypt, the people staged a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
They removed the dictator, mm-hmm. Hosni Mubarak.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, they mm-hmm. arrested him
mm-hmm.
and tried him. And then they had an election.
Mm-hmm.
A government was elected, which was the Muslim Brotherhood. And the West didn't like the government, yeah. so they overthrew them.
Yeah,
you know, they sponsored a coup
yeah.
Against the elected mm-hmm. government. And that happens a lot. But I think there's something happening in West Africa that may be really helpful.
Mm.
You know, the fight against Françafrique
yeah.
and the fight against Francefa?
Yeah.
I think that's very fundamental. You know?
Yeah.
Kind of...
Your point has been updated. Please check it on the map.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting rid of that... that toxic relationship
with France,
you know, with yeah. France, you know, France and other Western imperial mm-hmm. masters.
Uh-huh.
We need to get to the point where we're dealing instead of them just dictating.
Yeah, you see, like the reason why, you know, it's why I ask you this is, I feel like. When there's a revolution
mm-hmm.
or when, you know, we remove a dictator, I feel like there's a need for a better education on the aftermath of yeah. things.
Yep.
Even like talking about the cipher, we gotta get it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if people are really prepared
for the change.
Because, you know, when you look at a country like Sudan today, they print their own money.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own currency and they print it in Sudan,
mm-hmm.
not in Europe or, you know, whatever. But right now, there's so much inflation going on because, you know, of course, you know, they will print the money and some will print extra money for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I've lived in Ghana for, you know, for a couple of years,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but in my observation,
mm-hmm.
each time there was an election, there was a new bill being created, a new note.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I've seen creation of like the 10,000 bill and the 20,000 bill, mm-hmm. and I do believe that they're creating this so that they could like create extra.
Mm-hmm.
And stock it
mm-hmm.
so that when they're doing the next elections,
you know,
they
can throw it out. You know, they can throw it right. Right.
So
with it.
It's like, there. I feel like there's an education that needs to happen, you know, with the revolutionaries or the activists in terms of the aftermath of like overthrowing a government and yeah. not let the same people get back in.
Yeah, and it needs to be like where the people understand.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically like getting to the masses.
Yeah.
You know, helping them understand that we are rejecting dictatorship mm-hmm. and everything that looks like it.
Yeah, you know? That's a great point.
So just because basically changing a dictator for their opponent is not enough.
Yeah.
Even if it's not their opponent, or if it is their opponent, that's not enough, because what we want is real change in institutions where whoever's in power has checks and balances.
Yeah.
You know, if, you know, things like, you know, fraudulent, you know, printing of money, like you're saying, you know, and all of these other things that are happening, that the institutions themselves can actually address it. Because basically what happens with the dictators, and usually what happens with the people that replace them, the people who replace them are people who have long had the ambitions of just being in the seat of the dictator. They want that, and they get in and they abuse it and things like that. I mean, I think of people like, for example, like Liberia, right? Charles Taylor was horrible.
Yeah.
Samuel Doe was horrible.
Yeah.
You know, the people before them were horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Then after the change came Johnson Sirleaf, right? Okay. And then he wasn't that much better. The great thing was there was not a lot of fighting.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of corruption. There was a lot of corruption around, you know, her sons.
Oh, okay.
She was also, she had those long time ambitions of being the president, because it emerged in the 2000s that she had paid money, like tens of thousands of dollars. I saw one paper that said it was like $100,000 that she paid to Charles Taylor or gave to Charles Taylor during his war. So she contributed to the killing of Liberians.
Oh, that didn't
because,
come out.
Because she wanted to be president.
Oh.
And Charles Taylor, he took the money, but he didn't give her the seat.
Okay.
And so she basically had those long, you know, long ambitions.
Yeah.
And she came in, and not much is, you know, in terms of like things changing for the people.
Also,
not a lot happened.
But then she's from those trainings as F, you know, IMF and those long trainings. So I feel like
all the ones that are really harmful to Africa.
Yeah.
The IMF and the World Bank and
I feel like if someone is from those organizations,
they're really bad for Africa.
Yeah. So and I'm seeing this in Ivory Coast, right? The president
of Alassane Ouattara.
So-called building the country, you know. But I feel like in Africa, we're chasing a ghost. We're trying to compete, or we're chasing the wrong things. Like, it's not about building fancy bridges and the city.
Yeah, that's nonsense.
You know, like, people, in Burkina, when I went, in 2015, I've seen, you know, like we had these bridges that we actually really don't need. What we need is better roads.
Right, right.
Because, you know, when you get on the bridge, you go down, the bridge is empty. As soon as you go down, it's packed with traffic because the roads are narrow. And the other roads is only dirt road. So it's too much dust. So no one is trying to take that. Everybody's trying to take the one with tar. So everybody's packed on that. So if you go and make the roads better in inside the city, it's better than building fancy bridges or buildings that we don't really need.
Yeah, the priorities are misplaced.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, that's where sometimes when people talk about, you know, the way Rwanda looks right now.
Yeah.
That's just Kigali, by the way. Rwanda's not Kigali. Kigali is nice. It's clean.
You know what's funny?
Yeah.
I don't know if I still have these pictures, right? So, Rwanda is I think they were voted the cleanest city of Kigali in Africa.
Yeah, right? That's not surprising. And that Rwanda's generally has been that way too. This is even before the genocide. Rwanda was a clean place.
Uh-huh.
They had this practice, which they still talk about now. Uh-huh. Kagame makes it look seem like he's the one that started it. But there is something called Umuganda, uh-huh. which is public works.
Uh-huh.
When we were kids, we used to do that on Saturdays.
Okay.
Like, you go clean up,
uh-huh.
you know, clean up the city, clean up the neighborhood, uh-huh. all of that.
Uh-huh.
People did, like, they did that at work, at school, uh-huh. everywhere. They still do that. So, in terms of cleanliness,
uh-huh.
Rwanda's always been very, very clean.
Okay.
In terms of infrastructure,
uh-huh.
in the region,
uh-huh.
in comparison to the surrounding countries,
uh-huh.
Rwanda has always been a little bit ahead of everybody.
Yeah.
Like, even in the 80s and early 90s, before the genocide,
mm-hmm.
People would cross over from, you know, Congo or Uganda or Burundi or Tanzania, mm-hmm. the ones who were close enough, you know, for their telecommunication needs and travel,
mm-hmm.
and even like going out of the country, the airport,
mm-hmm.
and everything. And it's still the same airport, by the way.
People were transiting, like,
yep. And the airport is still the same.
It hasn't changed.
Right. And that's the first thing people see when they get to Kigali.
Wow.
A lot of things, you know.
I had pictures,
mm-hmm.
of, you know, articles,
mm-hmm.
back when Kampala was in power,
yeah.
with his clique. Ouagadougou was the cleanest city,
mm-hmm.
back then. So, like, they put the old ladies,
mm-hmm.
or women outside in the street, like, early in the morning, they would clean up. They don't pay, mm-hmm. them that good. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's all a front, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, yeah, the place looks clean, but that's just a front.
Yeah.
You know, and we could see it today. That's why he got kicked out. So, yep. you know.
Guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Even in Rwanda,
mm-hmm.
there's a book called Bad News,
mm-hmm.
The Last Journalist in a Dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
It was written by British journalist named Anjan Sundaram.
Uh-huh.
Anjan Sundaram went there to train journalists.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, you know, a lot of everybody either became like a government mouthpiece,
mm-hmm.
or they were persecuted and some of them jailed,
mm-hmm.
some of them went crazy, and some of them went into exile.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember if anyone had been killed of the people that he trained.
Mm.
So he wrote about it and he said, you know, one of the journalists that he, one of the, his students,
mm-hmm.
told him, hey, look at these streets, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see anybody? The people don't even use the streets. The Rwandan people don't walk on those streets because those are like showpieces.
Oh.
And so you bring the Europeans and the Americans and the outsiders, yeah. and the tourists, mm-hmm. you know, and the other Africans from other countries, uh-huh. and you just parade them in those streets, yeah. and you're like, man, this is so clean. This is clean.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about recently, I don't know if you probably heard the professor from Temple, Mark Lamont.
Yeah, Hill.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, he had this backlash about the fact that he said that phrase, from the river to the sea.
Mm-hmm.
What's your thought about it?
I mean, I think any reasonable person,
mm.
can see that it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing that should stop peace in Palestine,
yeah.
and, you know, Israel and Palestine,
mm-hmm.
conflict. That's a preventable and, you know, stoppable conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Any reasonable person,
mm-hmm.
can see that there is no way,
mm-hmm.
you can bring peace to that area,
mm-hmm.
without a free Palestine state.
Okay.
And to me, it's the right thing to do. The people should, the Palestinian people should have a free state. They should not be occupied. And so, you know, him not only having, he got fired, you know.
Yeah.
To get fired for saying something. I've seen people on CNN.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen people on CNN when there is like, say like killings,
mm-hmm.
of black people in, yeah. in the, you know, in basically all of America by the police, blaming the person that got killed, including kids like Tamir Rice, you know, 12-year-old Tamir Rice.
Wow.
You know, basically acting like, hey, you know, a cop should have, you know, free reign to kill, right? They don't get fired.
Yeah.
You know, they're there. He wasn't calling for violence against anybody.
Yeah.
He was not supporting, you know, he was not saying anything that is supporting terrorism.
Yeah, it was not inciting to a violence.
Yeah, and he got fired. That makes zero sense, you know. And he should have never got fired for it. And I hope they come back to their senses and give him his job back.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But
well, you know, you never know.
What's funny about this is I was watching a video. I haven't been to Palestine yet, but, you know, hopefully I'll go there soon. I was watching a video, and they actually have a wall keeping them.
Yeah, they do. Right? Yeah.
Do you know that that's the exact thing they did to the Jews?
In the Holocaust?
Yeah.
Yeah, in Germany.
They're basically using what was done to them to do the Palestine. Like, they will keep them in the area.
Basically concentrated, yeah.
Like, and they had a wall. I went to a museum, and when I saw it, I was like, wow. So, basically, hurt people.
Yeah, so it happens.
You know, but no one is studying that. Like, they only studying, because what they went through and what they're doing is exactly the same thing.
The victim becoming the victimizer.
Yeah, and it's the same thing as Kony, you know, the guy from Uganda.
Yeah.
Because he was a victim, now he became
a victimizer. Kagame the same way.
Yeah, so, but whoever says anything, they jump on the person.
Yeah, you know what's funny too, and what's crazy is, I have a Jewish friend that told me, you know, there is a saying in the community that says, you know, you have two Jews, you have three opinions.
Okay.
Basically, like, they disagree so much, yeah, you know. And the thing is, the it's not even the whole Jewish community that supports the policies, the Israel-Palestine policies. Yeah. But there is... It's true that, you know, when you say something that's favorable to Palestine, there's so many people, powerful people, who come down and come hard.
Yeah.
And that's the ones that are referred to as a Zionist. You know, they come really hard, you know, to try to crush the person. But I think that is something that could work. That, you know, it's worked so far. But in this age of technology and social media, it's going to be harder and harder to do, you know, to do it the way it's always been done.
But do you realize that, you know, they're doing just like how dictators are doing?
Yeah, it's full-blown dictatorship to basically, like, punish somebody for having an opinion.
Yeah.
You can't do that. That's nonsense. In America, especially, in a country where you're supposed to have, you know, freedom of speech is like... You know, Amendment 1 in the Constitution, it makes no sense to punish somebody for having an opinion. In the same way, to me, where they were trying to, I don't know if they've done it yet, you know, there's like a boycott movement against Israel. Okay. They were trying to call those people terrorists. How can you be a terrorist by just refusing to purchase things, you know? Or, like, refusing to partake in certain things. If you refuse to do something, that doesn't make you a terrorist. You're not hurting anybody.
That's your choice.
You know, you may be hurting a company's pockets.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's you know, it's all in that. To me, that's dictatorship.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, hopefully, you know, some of them come to their senses and understand that, you know, this is dictatorship.
That's why they don't have the full support of all Jewish people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the world now is slowly seeing, you know, what's happening, because in the past, you only saw it from corporate media. You know, you needed CNN, you needed BBC, you needed, you know, Al Jazeera and all the large media houses, you know, ABC, NBC, all those, showing you what's really happening.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with technology and social media.
Yeah, social media.
You know, you get to see it from the person living in that camp. I mean, people live in camps inside their home, like their homeland.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's going to become more and more visible.
Yeah.
And it's inevitable that opinions will change, you know, with people really seeing what's really happening.
I also feel like, you know, what is going on in, I think it's Somalia. It's not getting enough attention.
Yeah, I mean, Somalia's...
No, not Somalia, so Yemen.
Yemen. It's terrible.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why it's not is because it's basically like U.S.-sponsored, you know, groups are...
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, exactly. Saudi Arabia is a big-time ally of the U.S., and they're just in there killing, and it's been almost 10 years. And I think part of it is because they're black, you know, people getting killed.
And I heard that the reason, you know, that's just, you know, I don't have, like, I just heard that the reason why Sudan got off the list of, you know, the when they have the,
The Muslim ban?
Yeah, Muslim ban is because, you know, Saudi Arabia's intervention, you know, with the U.S. But because there was some Sudanese soldiers who went and fought for Saudi Arabia
In Yemen.
In Yemen.
And that's, this kind of a supplementing of troops has gotten so many dictators off the hook. That's why, so that part, as you mentioned, I'll take it back to our very first original conversation. Uganda does the same. They supplement troops for the U.S. So
Burkina used to.
And so they get favors. And you know, Yemen should be covered a lot more. Even when people talk about Yemen, by the way, I don't know if you've seen in the U.S. And coverage is different in the U.S. I mean, you've traveled other places. You've seen news from other places. The reporting is so different. Like, what you see in the U.S., when you go to other countries, you'll see a more complete picture because they're showing things that are, you know, they don't filter as much as they filter in the U.S. The U.S., a lot of the news media is going to give you the same point of view, you know, same sources, and, you know, kind of the way, I guess, the American, you know,
except that everybody's watching CNN.
exactly. Wow, everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
But you do get to see other news sources. Yeah, that's the thing. And seeing those, usually you see a different picture than what we see here. Yeah, but CNN is big. It's very international. It's everywhere. And it's in every language, you know.
Yeah.
Wherever you are, whatever language they speak, there's, you know, CNN is there speaking that language.
You know, I remember when Trump got elected and he started his craziness. There was Trevor Noah said, this looks like Africa, right? But back then it was funny.
Yeah.
But then when the election recently, when they started cheating on those voters, that was sad. That was like Africa 2.0.
That's been going on for a long time, by the way. Even during Obama's time, that was the case. Even before that, and before that. And I think it goes way back to slavery. You know, people used to argue that in order to vote, you should own land. How in the world? Wow. How in the hell are you supposed to own land when you're slave, a slave? Even if you're a freed slave.
Yeah, you gotta work hard.
How are you gonna... Yeah. You may never get the opportunities to earn you enough money to buy land.
Yeah.
And that's, you know... So, the voter suppression. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it was, you know, the fact that women couldn't vote, you know, for a long time.
Yeah.
So, now, it's just like, incrementally, there's always a reason.
Mm-hmm.
They look for a reason. Mm-hmm. None of it legitimate, in my opinion.
Yeah.
To keep people from voting.
Yeah.
And mass incarceration is a big part of it too, and you know, disenfranchising people.
Yeah,
it's you know, it's a big scheme. Like you say, it, you know, Africa 2.0, and more like African dictatorships 2.0.
Yeah, because we don't have those yet. What we do, like, the dictators or the presidents, they will say, oh, the other leader, or whether it's the opposition or the opponent, they will say, oh, maybe he's not from the same country, or you know, trying to find,
they'll find ways to disenfranchise people,
but not towards the people, because you know, we don't have, maybe because we don't have I mean, I can't say we, because South Africa has white people, like, you know, like Southern Africa, but
you generally can't tell. Yeah. Everybody looks the same. Yeah. Everybody's black.
So you can't
speak those languages, and everything is hard to know who's what, unless like there's something that makes them look physically different.
Different, yeah.
But you generally in one country, there's nothing that makes the people look physically different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think?
Other than men and women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think things could change with capitalism?
You mean like if capitalism is still in place, can things change?
Yeah, like right now, you know, we hope to switch things around, you know, all this plight that we have.
I think it's difficult because, you know, money talks, right?
Yeah.
And corporations run the world.
Mm-hmm.
Corporations enslaved people.
Mm-hmm.
Corporations and religion.
Mm-hmm.
That combination was the recipe for enslaving, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people. And today, they still do the same. Mm-hmm. You know, you have this China sweatshops, and you have, you know, all the mining. You know, in various countries, including the Congo, which we talked about a lot the other day. So there is greed, right? And that's why you have these people. By the way, there is a word for it. I think it's Swahili. Nyampara. You know, these nyampalas are these puppets.
Okay, yeah.
You know, they throw them a bone
and
they bite on the bone and they're happy.
Yeah,
and they're happy to provide whatever. So I think capitalism is going to continue to interfere with, you know, human rights.
Yeah.
I think though, for me, I keep going back to where, you know, where we are right now with technology, and like nothing can defeat the people.
Yes.
Basically, you know, whether it's capitalism, socialism, whatever system, it cannot defeat the people.
Yeah, cool.
The issue that we've had in the long, you know, in the past is people are not informed. People don't know. They don't realize how much power they have.
Yeah.
They don't even know the world outside of their own, you know, little, you know, part of the world. But now, because everybody's becoming so connected and so interconnected, you know, people who think alike, you know, who see things alike, people who were driven to get this change can now connect. And that's what we were talking about a little bit earlier, where, you know, we're connecting with people on the continent. You know, technology and social media. And I was not a fan of social media.
Yeah.
And I don't really use social media for anything personal that much anyway.
Yeah.
You know, but I see it as a tool to get people connected.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in the long run, even if they are like corporate ventures,
mm-hmm.
that and they may even like, you know, like right now, for example, Facebook
mm-hmm.
is not allowing people to promote their causes and things like that because of this Russia talk about, mm-hmm. you know, Russia mm-hmm. interfering in U.S.
Yeah.
elections and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's going to be other alternatives
mm-hmm.
within the social media world
mm-hmm.
that allow people to connect. And as people get more and more connected,
mm-hmm.
I think things are going to change. Like, it's inevitable. You cannot defeat the people. With or without capitalism, I just think capitalism is going to make it a lot harder. Because you can always bribe, you can always buy people. Mm-hmm. And there's many levels of buying people. Some people,
mm-hmm.
they're so useless.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, nobody's 100% yeah. useless, right? Yeah, they can yeah. serve as bad examples.
Yeah.
So some people are bad examples mm-hmm. because the only thing they need is being flattered.
Yeah.
So they get compliments, they're feeling themselves,
yeah.
you know, and they, you know, they're like, oh yeah. Even if they have an opinion,
mm-hmm.
right, today,
mm-hmm.
that is correct. If say like some dictator or some greedy corporation or somebody comes mm-hmm. and flatters them, they're mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, it's popping over there.
Yeah.
And they jump on it and they're gone. Some people
mm-hmm.
they bribed into it
mm-hmm.
and you know money makes them move.
Yeah.
Some people they get blackmailed into it.
Yeah.
Some people are too afraid and are indifferent.
Yeah.
Though all of those are like enemies of change. You know, like either selling out,
mm-hmm.
being indifferent, and all of that is being an enemy of change.
Yeah.
And what we got to do is just keep putting it in their face. Yeah. Because the more it makes them uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
the more they got to face themselves and either, you know, make a decision.
Yeah,
make one way or the other. Yeah. What do I do? How do I, you know,
yeah.
do I... I know it's wrong. They know it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But they are unwilling to touch it or to criticize it or to do anything to... Well, they're unwilling to leave their position of indifference
mm-hmm.
because if they acknowledge it,
mm-hmm.
then they're compelled to do something.
Yeah.
And you know what? What we got to do is just keep making them uncomfortable. I do think without capitalism,
mm-hmm.
change can come faster. But with capitalism, change will come regardless. It's just going to be difficult.
I definitely think it is difficult because, you know, that's the reason why after any revolution there's still the same people coming in because
yep.
you know they're right there
mm-hmm.
and you know as soon as you come in they're like, all right, you know, we can make this and make this for you, not mm-hmm. for the people.
Right
You know,
people sell, the people are sold.
Yeah,
people are sold out. But the people
mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard the saying about Harriet Tubman? Which she says, I freed so many slaves.
Oh, yeah.
But I could have freed a whole lot more
mm-hmm.
only if they knew they were slaves.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The people got to know that they're being sold.
Yeah.
So we have a job
to do.
Big job to do to let the people know that they're being sold. And once the people realize they're being mm-hmm. treated as merchandise,
mm-hmm.
then they will make a choice whether they remain merchandise or resist being a merchandise. You're always going to have some people who are like so weak.
Yeah.
Again, nobody's totally useless.
Yeah.
They're bad examples, right? They're examples of what not to do. You're going to have those that are so useless. They will serve as the example of those who are willing to be merchandise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. I don't know, like, what we're going to replace, like, especially like in African countries, what we could replace this capitalism with. But I do know that we did have a lot of system that were great for the people. And if we turn towards ourselves, we will find a lot of solution to our problems.
Yeah, I think we got to be collaborative. Yeah. I think in the long run, there's pursuing change, but there's also knowing where we want to go.
Yeah.
Because what happens is, like you said before, there's usually revolutions in a void. And usually the void is filled by similar people, the same people. Because people with these political ambitions, a lot of times they're just like the person they're trying to replace.
Yeah.
You know, and they're willing to sell out.
I don't think they even, they only have a plan for themselves.
Yeah, they're, right, right. You know,
they're not.
Their plan is to sell the people out just like the one before them.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's bad news for them.
Yeah, for
the people. For the people.
And it is, I feel like it's great that, you know, most of whether it's, you know, the your the institution that you created, the Great African Lake,
the African Great Lakes African Network,
and like organizations like Friends of Congo, I think it's great that they're able to, you know, link up with the youth.
You know
the thing that Maurice said last time is, you know, they also provide them with training
and tools, training, and tools.
We spoke about it, you know, I feel like only through a good revolution, a good revolution would come out of it. Because, you know, then they know they have a direction, as she said, and, you know, they know what to do after.
I think we need a roadmap, you know.
Yeah.
And then also the thing is, we know what we were into is not like, it's not a sprint. It's not a 10-second race.
No.
It's a marathon running, you know, 23 miles, you know, 25 miles, you know. That's the distance that we're running. That's the distance we're going. So to run the 26 miles, you got to pace yourself.
And you need to be prepared.
You got to prepare.
Yeah.
You got to train.
Yeah.
And you got to, you know your pace. Yeah. You got to finish, you know. And I think a lot of people approach it as, you know, just because I'm involved, a lot of people think as soon as they're involved, things should be moving and changing.
Yeah.
You know, in like a week or two or a month. Yeah.
I always wanted to ask you about Kofi Annan. I know, you know, when these things were happening in Rwanda, you know, you were probably young, but I think he was
at the UN, time, right? He was in charge of peacekeeping.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah. What did he, like, did he, because I know that Boutros Ghali was let go because his politics were not.
Yeah, he was too vocal. Yeah.
With the West, US, yeah. You know, in the US. But I feel like anytime someone is in the position and is being praised by the media, especially Western medias, I'm not sure the person is really doing a great job. But
yeah,
I don't know much about Kofi Annan, but I do know a bit about Boutros Ghali because, you know, I read a bit about him and when he was let go, you know, like.
So let me put it this way. I'm personally not a fan of Kofi Annan.
Okay.
For multiple things, not just the peacekeeping decisions that he made in the genocide in Rwanda, you know, him and, some of the leaders in the UN, but to suppress the UN investigations. There was a number of UN investigations that were suppressed that were talking about the crimes committed by the RPF, by Kagame, and they were going to persecute him in UN courts or at least persecute his soldiers. They never did that. You know, so the people died, right? Mm-hmm. A bunch of Africans were killed.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing was done to give justice to those people. That's in Rwanda. That's countless people killed by the RPF. Move over to the Congo.
Mm-hmm.
He was still the Secretary General
yeah.
of the UN.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, after him was the Korean guy. I forget his name. Kim, I think it was.
Yeah, I don't know.
He also didn't do anything. Look at what's happening in the Congo. You still have the biggest killers, basically.
Yeah, Congo, Yemen, still going. But that's why the reason why I'm asking is, it's two or three people,
mm-hmm.
well, probably four. One was kicked out,
mm-hmm.
and these people remain now. I know, like, through the discussion at the event,
mm-hmm.
someone said Museveni called, I think.
Kofi Annan.
To ask him to drop.
To have an investigation.
He told him, like, hey, there's nothing he could do about it. Mm-hmm. But eventually it got stopped. So
mm-hmm.
that showed that it wasn't, Kofi Annan didn't have the power to stop that investigation. The U.S. probably had the power to, but the reason why I feel like he called Kofi Annan is because he felt comfortable enough to call him.
See, my thing is, exactly, he was friends with those dictators.
That's the issue. You feel comfortable enough to call someone and ask them to drop an investigation. Like, you're not going to call someone that you know is the person is like one way.
Yeah, if he was principled.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Look at the answer.
Yeah.
He said, I don't have the power to do that.
Yeah.
So what would he have done if he had the power?
Yeah.
If that's the answer he gave,
yeah.
why not say, hey, look, let the investigation happen.
Yeah.
And whatever comes out, you know, we want to get to, you know, I want to see the bottom of it. Yeah. I want to see what's, you know, the right thing versus the wrong thing. But he said, I don't have the power to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe if he had the power, he would have stopped it. And the thing is, too, even if he didn't have power to do things,
mm-hmm.
I think it's a responsibility to the people, you know, to speak up and basically say, look, this is wrong. Even if you have no power to do anything about it,
mm-hmm.
at least be vocal about it. And that's my issue with...
I've seen so many views that, you know, after... He wasn't at the UN where he tried to, like, he answered some of the questions, and I feel like he's someone who's very diplomatic about things. You know, he's not trying to mess up his, you know.
He's very image conscious. He's very
He's
protective of his job, you know, and he's
so like he's not trying to mess things up with the Western, and he's not trying to appear, you know, like a probably sell out to, you know, some countries. So sometimes you almost, you know, you feel like people, you either want to defend us or you don't want to defend us. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't, if you want to defend us, there's no way that you're going to have to bump head with the rest of them.
That's why I said we've got a big, big job ahead of us to educate the people.
Yeah.
We cannot be just impressed by the simple fact that this guy became the Secretary General mm-hmm. of the UN. We should not be impressed by anybody's position.
Yeah, it's true, it should be about
what they do.
Yeah, it's true that it was the first Western, like, you know, African.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, black know, African. Black,
yeah. yeah. So, yeah, I think that's a lot of people, they have, you know,
yeah,
we admire because
being smart is not enough for a person to be admired.
Yeah, definitely.
Being in a high position
mm-hmm.
should not be enough for anybody to be admired or respected. We should always scrutinize what is the person actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not doing the right thing, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter what position they're in, doesn't matter how smart they are, mm-hmm. doesn't matter how well they speak, doesn't matter how they pretend to care, you know, for the people. It should always be about what their actions are. Yeah. And that's what we gotta, you know, educate the people, you know, about, because appearances mm-hmm. are big. People yeah. are so impressed with appearance.
Yeah.
And that's enough for them yeah. to be satisfied.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and to me, it's about what you do, yeah. not about how you look and what you, you know, what position yeah. you occupy.
Yeah. All right, Claude, thank you so much, you know, for, you know, coming today for this second session of the podcast. I really appreciate it. I think when we started, I thought it was recording for the first 2 or 3 minutes, and it wasn't, so I had to, like, you know, go press okay. it again. So, you know, thank you so much. You know, this is, whenever we do this, it's really, you know, it informs people and it opens people's mind on a lot of issues, because, yep. you know, a lot of people really don't, you know, they're not going to get it from the news. So the yep. fact that
yeah. we could,
you know, give it to them in a very simple form, I think is very important. So we really want to, you know, thank you.
We have it documented for the people.
Yeah.
You thank know. You for having me again. And hopefully, you know, soon we'll do another one.
Yeah, definitely.
We'll keep doing this and make you know, sure. keep growing the audience.
Yeah. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you.